Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And folks, it is now or never. And as a matter of fact, it's nice to see that there's, you know, some of these organizations that are out there telling you about the reset, the big global resets coming, and so forth. But sadly, these same organizations have nothing. And as a matter of fact, they turn their back on the solution. Some of these people that are going around speaking about the global reset, and you see them in social, if you're on conservative websites or conservative pages on Facebook or what have you, you're hearing all of these people talk about, you got to come and listen to the global reset. It's almost like this, you know, as they do these whirlwind tours talking about the education system. But they turn their back on the one thing that would end federal involvement in education. You know, when I talk to people, it's almost like they don't care about the solution. They only care about taking swings at the evil, you know, the evil finger that they're fighting. And when I say finger, they're a finger because the federal government is this huge entity that has it's a multi-armed god. For every department, for every role, responsibility, and power, it creates its own arm, and each arm has its own masses of fingers that is basically grabbing you, poking you, harassing you, and oppressing you. And when they're talking about just striking back at this one finger, folks, they're not doing you a service. They're doing you a disservice. These people aren't, you know, when I actually started dealing with some of these people, I thought that they were good people. But as I have proven to them what they've done and what they're doing, and they continue to turn your back on the facts and the truth, and they don't want you to know what the truth is, why is that? Why is it that somebody would actually take that position? You know, there's some people that I know personally, very personally, that I have proven with emails how I have dealt with some of these, you know, big conservative champions. Oh, you got to go listen to this guy. You got to go hear this guy. You got to go hear these people, folks, what have you. Folks, you're being played. You're being played by conservatives. As a matter of fact, the more and more I look at everything, I realize that there are people that are either espousing deliberately false narratives, or they're doing it unknowingly because they're being funded to do so. And so, anyway, let me just kind of move forward. As you know, the show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you're listening to the only show that goes through the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. I will tell you again, and I think I glossed over it last time, so I want to really focus. Paul Venable needs your support. He needs your help. He needs some gas money. I tell you every year, and as a matter of fact, after this election, I'm going to ask you to please start saving some money for gas money. These guys that we actually get that are willing to commit, here's a sad thing. And actually, this is a good thing, maybe. He's getting more money from out-of-state contributions from you than he is from within his own state. Now, it's not that he doesn't have supporters, but I do know this year that is very tough because Biden is going after everybody's discretionary income. When you inflate the currency and you take away the you know, what we would call disposable income from the middle age, not the middle age, the middle class and, you know, average American, then they can't use money to fight back. This is why it becomes even more important for you to start inspiring businesses to get involved in sponsoring the Constitution and standing behind politicians like Paul Venable. We need businesses and corporations to say, and when I say corporations, I'm not talking, the global corporations won't do this, but there are lots of little corporations out there, and they're corporations because of, you know, minimizing their business liability so that they don't get sued and lose everything. Fact of the matter is, folks, we need to start getting people, you know, I should say businesses and those small owners of these businesses engaged in understanding that they need to start actually using their money to protect their business. We just saw and we have proven how government will go down and shut down businesses and then give favor to those who bow at their feet. That's how it's been playing out, folks. And if businesses are that stupid, then they're doomed to fail unless they start getting on top of this. It's that easy. So anyway, get out there if you can. Go to Paul Venable's website and give him some love. Give him some support. Give him some fuel in his tank so that he can at least get around and do what he can to fighting Eric Schmidt and the Democrat, the two-party ticket that has a lock on all elections. I'm telling you that we have the best chance if this man gets exposure in this Senate race and he gets invited to these debates and he actually has an equal opportunity for all people to hear him. Because bottom line, there's something wrong when foreign investment, when I say foreign investment coming into a campaign like Eric Schmidt's and whatever, I forget the Democrat, it's not Dine, it's somebody else, but all of these investments that are going into these other party players, all of the investment, most of it is coming from outside the state. Most of it is coming from either large, you know, deep pockets where they're buying influence. These Senate seats are not cheap. Look at any Senate seat. Almost every serious candidate makes millions of dollars in that campaign race. That's what Eric Schmidt is doing. And Eric Schmidt should actually be removed from office for some of the crap he's done. It came out in the last debate. It came out in the last debate that he has been responsible for allowing China and foreign entities to buy state resources and assets. Are you kidding me? Where in the Constitution does he have that authority? The federal government doesn't have that authority. No state has that authority to do that. Anyway, as you know, we are going through the Constitution, and I'm going to bring it down a notch because, you know, the Constitution, you know, requires calmer heads and you know, more seriousness. So as we were just beginning Section 5 before we went into the break, or actually before we ended our last show, let me go ahead and dive straight into this. And so this is where each house shall be the judge of the elections, returns, qualifications of its own members. And this is one of these lines that I have told you that is being violated. And as a matter of fact, their judgment is based ideologically. Do we consider you a threat? If you are a hardcore Republican, if you're a hardcore conservative, you're not wanted here. They'll allow AOC and the communists vent and actually have floor time and actually drive agendas. Are you kidding me? What the heck's going on in this country, folks? Anyway, it goes on and says, and a majority of each shall constitute a quorum to do business, but a smaller number may adjourn from day to day and may be authorized to compel the attendance of absent members in such manner and under such penalties as each house may provide. In other words, you know, they can allow people to go home to do their farming. They can allow people to do that, but they can also compel people to actually show up. Why did they have to insert this? This shows you that at the time of government that being a public servant wasn't necessarily the most important thing to do. Being a public servant was secondary to your overall business responsibilities in making sure that your crops were being tended to, your seed was being planted, your harvest. This is why they had breaks. They had specific adjournments at certain times to prepare for the harvest and to do the harvest of their crops, because this is how people made their money. They didn't have a regular paycheck, folks. They didn't get paid twice a month like you do. They got all of their money. Think about this. most people in America, in the agrarian society at the time of the Constitution and when this was written, most people got paid once a year or whenever their crop came in. Now, fishermen, they got paid a little more, and fishermen were actually probably a little better off, especially if they were good, successful businessmen, because they would go out, they would be able to bring their fish to the market and make money. They were harvesting daily, where farmers, they could only harvest once a year, right? How many times can you grow wheat in a year? How many times can you grow corn in a year? You only harvest once a year. And so the cost of those things, as a matter of fact, there was probably some equality on that, but when it came to meat and so forth, you know, the fishermen only would bring and catch what they could sell. What they couldn't sell ended up becoming chum, and this is where they would use that for bait or what have you. But when we look at, you know, the market space, they weren't actually I don't believe they were canning fish. They may have been preserving it, like sardines and so forth. There was the salting and preservation efforts, but I can't believe that the people in Ohio and the people in Kentucky were buying seafood, or I should say these fish that were coming out of the ocean, as a means of feeding them. It was really more of a diet of those along the coast that could go to the fresh markets, and or because these types of products didn't travel. It was durable goods that traveled, like wheat, sugars, and those types of things. And oh, by the way, folks, they used to have to lock up their sugar because it was such a rare commodity. We will be right back after these promos.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let's get back to the Constitution. And a majority of each shall consist of, okay, so we kind of went through that, but a smaller number may adjourn from day to day. And so the reason I'm kind of pointing out, and that's, I forgot. I just remembered my wife came in and we've got an appointment with a lawyer. So anyway, for what it's worth, I want to help you understand that Congress and Congress's duties, as I explained to you before, it was the Senate, not necessarily the House of Representatives, but the Senate actually had business that was far more urgent, far more important that they had to tend to as they started talking about responsibilities and so forth. And so even though each of the houses had some, you know, general powers, you know, legislating and so forth, the Senate had these roles and responsibilities that meant that they could not necessarily be able to get away as much. But the House of Representatives was really part-time labor. And it was a huge blessing to, though, I mean, it was like a reward for those people that, you know, were successful to be able to go receive a income serving the government and also being able to go back home. In some ways, you had to have some level of success to be in Congress because, you know, the majority of your earnings had to be really coming from your plantation, your whatever it was that you had at that point in time, whatever business it was. And, oh, by the way, the southern states, Virginia, actually, if you really look at the Civil War boundary, because they already were getting rid of slavery in many of the states to the north. This was already brought up. We already covered this. So the shift economically was occurring at that point in time. But going back to it again, they only made money for the most part when they sold something, when whatever it was that they were doing in their enterprise, in their business, and business was family. That's why they had lots of kids. They had lots of kids so that the kids could actually do the family business and that the business would grow with grandkids and so forth, that the plantation would keep on moving or the factory would keep on growing. Anyway, as we move forward with Section 5, each house may determine the rules of its proceedings, punish its members for disorderly behavior, and, with the concurrence of two-thirds, expel a member. Now, we're getting into some things that, you know, really didn't exist in the Articles of Confederation, but these were things that were already looming that they didn't even discuss as amendments. When they talked about Articles of Confederation and the problems that they had to deal with, these things were out there, but they weren't amendments. In other words, there was behavior that was problematic. Some people were, you know, pretty obnoxious. They were pretty, I'll just say, brutal. There was one case in time in Congress where one man pummeled another man with his cane. I don't remember the names and details, but I do remember it was so brutal that I believe that the gentleman that used the cane was censored or was punished to some degree, but he was not given the justice for the crime that he committed at that point in time, even at that point in time, because assault and battery existed on the books. So if you kind of look at it, it's kind of like a den of thieves, and they kind of create this honor among thieves of what the type of crimes and what type of crap they will put up with. And I find it interesting that they allowed, the framers actually put this in, thinking that this would actually help. Folks, I honestly think that there should be a petition and or a change to dictate that the people of the states should, you know, of their own representatives, they should be able to look at that behavior and say, you know what, that's repugnant. That is unbecoming of, you know, the good people of this state. I believe we should actually be the ones, because they're representing us. And so I'm just putting a little note here that I believe that this needs to actually become a petition so that, you know, we can actually, you know, start cleaning up in the future this concept of our representative government. Hopefully that makes sense. Because this is one of those things that was, like I said, it was looming, it was problematic in the Articles of Confederation. Why else did you think that they came up with this? Why would they think about in the importance of helping and policing bad behavior by members of the houses or members of Congress? Because they knew it was already happening in the Continental Congress. There were people that were coming. There were hotheads or what have you. There were these some of them war hawks. Some of these people that were just mean. Well, okay, that's how it is. I mean, right? The best thing in this world are its people. The worst thing in this world are its people. Anyway, each house shall keep a journal of its proceedings and from time to time publish the same. And so this right here has been violated. And many times, as a matter of fact, I think this needs to be petitioned as well. I believe that these journals need to have a petition, or actually they need to include these subcommittee petitions, or I should, I'm sorry, that these subcommittees and every committee should actually have to keep a journal. I don't care how classified it is. As a matter of fact, you've heard me say this. I believe state legislatures should actually have national clearances so that they can go in and ask for the proceedings. Who said what? Everything. We need full transparency. And even though it'd be nice to have full transparency to the people, at least we have to have a check by the state legislatures over that federal government. Bing. I know lights go on every time I say these types of things because people go, wow, you know, he's right. Had we had oversight, Snowden would never have been able to do the damage that idiot did to this nation. If you're one of those people that idealize him as a hero, you're listening to the wrong show. And I know this really is a hot button issue because there are so many people that think he's a hero that they don't understand that what he did was unconstitutional, just as bad, if not just as worse, because the people that get outed, the sources, the means, and methodologies that he outed caused more damage. Don't tell me that he did good. Everybody knew, even before he exposed this, even Rand Paul had been telling people that government was doing things it shouldn't be doing with these intel communities. Period. Was that not enough? The states at that point should have had this authority, and the problem still exists. The states need to have full oversight. This is why this is a big part. This is why I'm including a petition for the Constitution to actually empower the states with intel oversight, that all proceedings, if we have governors or we have county commissioners in a room talking, it needs to be recorded and it needs to be published. And or if it's classified, it needs to be accessible every minute of that. And so, you know, you have the ability when you go into a secure area that they actually keep track of the time when, you know, you badge in because there's these proximity readers, you boom, and it opens the door for you because your RFID chip allows you, because you have these accesses, it allows you into these rooms. And so every time somebody comes in and every time somebody leaves, all of those types of records should be accessible to the state legislature so that they can actually determine, hey, hold on here. All of these people were in this room for 3 hours, and we only see 1 hour of time. Does that make sense? So as we're going through the Constitution, I am proving to you that there's really great things in here, but there are things that because of today's technology and because of the corruption of our government, we absolutely need to ensure that we have a tighter transparency and a better reach into oversight of our subcontractor or our child government known as the federal government. Then it goes on and says, accepting such parts as may be in their judgment requires secrecy. Well, I already addressed this, that even if it requires secrecy, state legislatures should have access to that and should be able to actually go in and determine who is violating and who isn't violating. You know what? I can tell you that once we start empowering the state legislature, this oversight and transparency that they already possess this, but once we empower them and teach them that they have this ability to do these things, then I'm telling you, folks, why is it that we would have to suffer these types of indignations from Congress itself each time? you know, when it does these, when it creates these laws, when it does this crap like it's doing with Build Back Better and all of these other things. Because the state legislature could be able to look at this and go, no, are you kidding me? You don't have the authority to do this crap. And the yeas and nays of the members of either house on any question shall, at the desire of one-fifth of those present, be entered on the journal. In other words, and I think Rand Paul, you know, had called for this. There were specific times when they were basically voting on things that they didn't keep track of. You know what? Back in the days of the framers, keeping record was kind of, you know, laborious, and making them do it all the time, you know, just seemed like, well, you know, we got to, it can be done electronically. All of these documents and records and how they vote and everything else could easily be provided to the people. We should be demanding it. And here is another thing that needs a requirement of, for transparency purposes. We'll be right back after this.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let's move on. Neither house during this session of Congress shall, without the consent of the other, adjourn for more than 3 days, nor to any other place than that in which the two houses shall be sitting. In other words, can they adjourn to go somewhere else? So they have to have the consent of the other if they're going to go somewhere else. And, you know, this all makes sense. It kind of creates this, okay, this is how we're going to, you know, there are times, and I forget the name of the mountain, but in case of an emergency, Congress will have to adjourn from the Capitol to go meet in, I forget, Rocky Mountain or some mountain that they have, Iron Mountain, where, you know, they have the space and place for them to actually, you know, go to like shelter and be able to function as Congress. And to do that, they would need to basically, both houses would have to declare and authorize them to adjourn from the Capitol to go to this other place. Now, technically, had they been truly being attacked on January 6th, they could have done the exact same thing. But that's for adjournment of over 3 days, where they just basically bailed because they were getting caught violating the Constitution. Unfortunately, the people that were catching them didn't realize. It's kind of like some kid walking into the room and seeing somebody doing something, but they didn't know what they were seeing. And the criminals who were committing the crime, you know, said, hey, we're being caught. And so they knew that they were committing a crime, so they grabbed whatever they were doing and grabbed their things and skedaddled and hightailed it out. What should have happened on January 6th, this is a pathetic tragedy of America when we look at really what happened and what Congress got away with. And as a matter of fact, it actually came up by Paul Venable in his debate, what really happened on January 6th, that the insurrection was occurring inside the Capitol, that the insurrection was against the Constitution, was being done by Congress. And it's so funny to see the guy that wrote the spin story for the Independent Missourian or whatever, this newspaper rag, was basically saying that he was just covering up for the Donald Trump lie, when in fact, what Paul Venable was talking about was something very specific and very different than any of the assertions that have been going on regarding the election. This is actually the truth. And this guy is telling him he's just perpetuating a lie. Who is spinning the lies in the web of lies to basically keep America in the dark? Ah, yeah. That guy's doing a good job, because that's his job, is to keep you in the dark. And so he's hoping that you don't actually watch that video. If you haven't gone to Paul Venable's website, go check it out. Go look at, you know, what he actually said and how this guy says he's perpetuating. Because Trump has never once stood up regarding the Electoral College and how the states violated. We've gone over this time and time again. His attorney general could have easily, but he wouldn't have, because his attorney general was an operative working against him. We need, you know, when we look at people that supposedly know the system and we hire them, I can tell you every time that is the case, you have hired a corrupt person. I saw that actually happen in our legislative district in Washington, where one person was jumping up to the Senate and the person to replace them was an insider. And I'm going, and their argument in why you should choose them to replace this person is because they know how it works. I mean, they basically said, I'm a swamp creature and you need to put me in there. That's what you get, America. This is what you get. We need to actually find who are the champions for the Constitution and demand going down that path, okay? Period. Period. So, anyway, Section 6 is where we're at now. The senators and representatives shall receive a compensation for their services to be ascertained by law and paid out of the Treasury of the United States. They shall in all cases except treason, felony, and breach of the peace be privileged from arrest during their attendance at the session. In other words, they're above the law. In other words, you can't arrest them and give them a ticket while they're in session. So it's not, you know, going to session or coming home. It is that whole time. And so, you know, I myself look at this as because anybody that knows me knows that I tend to drive a little fast. Well, I used to. And had I been an elected official and had I had, you know, this, you know, as a state legislator or as a congressman, I probably would have been known as the fastest congressman in the United States. And I don't know, in some states, I guess it may be a felony if you are doing what they would consider reckless driving or what have you. But 9 times out of 10, you know as well as I do that the law or law enforcement, you know, actually protects the privileged. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger, I mean, look at some of these, you know, athletes and all these other stars, these elitists, you know, and how they have privilege. This is why I, you know, we go through this separately, but we do bring up our entire, you know, penal system and the processing for courts and so forth with bail, fines and fees and everything else. It is not just. What a, you know, a baseball star pays for drunk driving compared to a guy struggling and paying for his family for drunk driving, it should not be the same. And it is. Anyway, I digress. So, in other words, they're above the law for the for their attendance at the session of their respective houses and in and going to and returning from the same. And for any speech or debate in either house, they shall not be questioned in any other place. In other words, you can't come up and call them out and or charge them for a crime for anything that they're doing while they're in session. But that doesn't mean that they can get away with any type of crime. Now, it does say that treason, felony, and breach of the peace, you can prosecute. You can arrest them for those types of things. But even today, when we see that treason is being ignored, we actually see Congress in treason left and right over all sorts of things. There is no reason why every member of Congress should not be charged with treason and hauled back to their state for allowing this invasion to continue for so many decades on our southern border. We'll get to this. Article 4, Section 4. We will get to this. So anyway, let me get to the next paragraph of Section 6. No senator or representative shall, during the time for which he was elected, be appointed to any civil office under the authority of the United States, which shall have been created or the emoluments whereof shall have been increased during such time. And no person, now they say increased with an E, not an I, but that's okay. Excuse me. And no person holding any office under the United States shall be a member of either house during his continuance in office. So in other words, they're trying to make it sure that nobody can double dip. Nobody can actually be, you know, appointed to one office where you, because back in those days, again, these positions were part-time. Your responsibility, I mean, it was easy. And it, why did they put this in? Because it was being done. There had been times where people had actually double-dipped and worked in one house and did one other thing and what have you. The only reason why we have crimes is because people have actually done the deeds, whether it be murder, whatever it has been. I mean, the fact is that, you know, the identified sins or the identified crimes exist because for the first time somebody's actually done something that nobody thought would ever be done to a person, such as rape. Really? Or murder? Why did these laws even exist? It's because people do these things. And this is why this was injected. This is why all of these things were being placed in, because they had already been privy to this. They were already aware that these things were more than capable of being done in American government. Now, Section 7, and let me see, we have 1 minute. So this is important, and this is going to show you how the Senate just recently passed a bill, and anything that originates regarding revenue, or I should say taxation, has to originate in the House of Representatives, because right here in Section 7, this is being violated. All bills for raising revenue shall originate in the House of Representatives. But the Senate may propose or concur with amendments on other bills. Every bill shall have passed the House of Representatives and the Senate shall, before it become law, be presented to the United States or the President of the United States. Now, this right here we're getting into is the veto process. And so with only 10 seconds left, I'm just going to kind of leave it here where we're leaving off right now, because what we want to kind of cover the importance of this concept of vetoes, that the president actually has some level of authority. So we're going to go into a break, and when we come back, we'll kind of dive into this, because what's really important is that 9 times out of 10, when it's a really it's a good law, Congress never has a problem overpowering the veto. The problem is that we've lowered our threshold and standards and our politicians so low that they don't even do this anymore. We'll be right back after this.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so what we need to do here is really precisely get into this whole veto, bill, oath of office, writing of bills, and oath of office. What you need to understand, folks, is that with this whole oath of office holds them to the constraints. And what we don't have as we go through this, most people would think, because they've obscured this thing called the Constitution, they've obscured this legality of constraining them. So let me kind of connect the dots before I get into this. Because if a senator, if a representative writes a bill that is not within the jurisdiction, not within the enumerated powers, they are violating their oath of office. Therefore, if they do so, then everybody in Congress that votes for it is now violating their oath of office. Now, if it goes to the president, after it passes both houses with, you know, a majority in both houses who are willing to violate their oath of office, and it goes to the president, and the president goes ahead and approves the bill by signing it and not veto it and call them out for violating their oath of office, we have what you basically call a trifecta. The representatives of the people, the representatives of the state, and the executive, the president of the United States, have willingly and knowingly violated their oath of office. Therefore, we are in the midst of a constitutional crisis. Because understanding that a law that has, you know, that has no basis in the Constitution cannot be enforced, and the fact that they basically create these systems and mechanisms of enforcing all against the Constitution as well, we have a level of tyranny that is, it, and the fact is, folks, we don't have to deal with this, but we have a level of tyranny that is hard to even fathom. The framers couldn't even fathom this. This is why Section 3 of the 14th Amendment became so important, because now we have the ability to start removing anytime somebody puts pen to paper and actually purports and says, I've got a bill and it will be a violation of the Constitution. That is rebellion against the Constitution. Period. And so, as I've highlighted this, this is a dark red. Every bill which shall have passed the House of Representatives and the Senate shall, before it become a law, be presented to the President of the United States. If he approve, he shall sign it, but if he shall not, return it with his objection to the House in which it shall be originated, where it shall have originated. Who shall enter the objections at large on the journal and proceed to reconsider it? If, after such reconsideration, 2/3 of that House shall agree to pass the bill, it shall be sent together with the objections to the other House, by which it shall likewise be reconsidered. And if approved by 2/3 of that House, it shall become law. Now, I'm going to stop right here. And you've heard me talk about Madison's veto of the Department of Transportation, when they tried to create the bonus bill that would have empowered Congress to actually start functioning with the roles, responsibilities, and powers of the Department of Transportation. And Madison said that those powers don't exist. What would have happened had Congress come back with 2/3 of both houses and said, we're going to make this law? And the president still, basically his hands would be tied because they would be overriding his veto power. But we've gotten to a point where nobody stands up for their oath of office and stands up for their Constitution and supports the Constitution. They do whatever is politically expedient. Okay, but in all such cases, moving on, but in all such cases, the votes of the both houses shall be determined by yeas and nays, and the names of the persons voting for and against the bill shall be entered on the journal of each house respectively. If any bill shall not be returned by the president within 10 days, Sundays excepted, it shall have been presented to him. The same shall be law, in like manner as if it had been signed, unless the Congress, by their adjournment, prevent its return, in which case it shall not be. In other words, they can't play these games. You know, one can't hide from the other, and the other can't, hide from, the president can't hide from Congress, and Congress can't hide from the president in trying to make something become law or not law. So, every order or resolution, now we're going down to the next paragraph, every order or resolution or vote which the concurrence of the Senate and House of Representatives may be necessary, except on a question of adjournment, shall be presented to the President of the United States, and before the same shall take effect, shall be approved by him or disapproved by him, shall be repassed by 2/3 of the Senate and House of Representatives according to the rules and limitations prescribed in the case of a bill. Now, when it comes to the Republic Review, and most people think, oh, this right here becomes a problem for Republic Review. It doesn't. Because when it comes to Republic Review and we have Congress passing state directives, and we got 28 states or more that are demanding full compliance of the Constitution, if the president at that point, because at this point in time, by the time we get these directives and by the time we finally get the full majority of the House, then if the president at that point chooses to refuse to follow the Constitution and support the directives of Republic Review, then they can instantly impeach him. The question is, will we get 2/3 of the House of the Senate to actually impeach him for his failings to do these things, for his failings to support that? This is why it is important that we do get to that point, because if we actually have an activist president that is going to thumb his nose and, you know, basically flaunt his willingness to violate his oath of office, America needs to be prepared for that. And so this is why it's so important that we actually start changing. And this is why I talk about this in the article. I talked about this on my show, creating a collective conscience of compliance, compliance to the law. You know, it's interesting how the left wants the laws that they want complied to, but the laws that they don't like, they don't want to comply to. I mean, we don't have the choice of cherry picking, and you can't cherry pick. If you do, then you have no business being in government, because government does not have the power or authority to ignore the law themselves. They are bound to it. Anyway, now we're going into Section 8. We got about 2.5 minutes, and I'm going to get into the preamble now. And so this, again, so what is a preamble, right? We've kind of covered this before, and I'll just cover it again because I told you I would. Because Article 1, Section 8 has a preamble. A preamble is an introductory and or expressionary statement in a document that explains the document's purpose and underlying philosophy. When applied to the opening paragraphs of a statute, such as the delegated powers of Article 1, it may recite historical fact pertinent to the subject of the statute. It is distinct from the long title or enacting formula of a law. Now, this is what the preamble of Article 1 states. The Congress shall have the power to lay taxes, duties, imposts, and excises, to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. But all duties, imposts, and excises shall be uniform throughout the United States. Now, in other words, one person could say, well, that's kind of like granting general powers. But no, what this is it's a preamble to the specific powers that are following it. Because the first power that is identified is Congress shall have the power to borrow money on the credit of the United States. Boom. And that's what it says right here. It says at the very beginning of the preamble, the Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises to pay the debts. So if they have to pay the debts, then they shall be able to borrow money on the credit of the United States and provide for the common defense. So anyway, so this law right here, this was covered by that preamble, that the preamble basically states that they're going to have the power to do this, and then they list the specific powers of what and how to do it. To regulate commerce with foreign nations. Okay, so listen to what it says. Not to regulate commerce of all corporations. It doesn't say this. It says to regulate commerce with foreign nations and among the several states and with Indian tribes. They do not have the authority to tell you how much water your toilet paper or your toilet can flush. Toilet paper, sorry. They do not have the authority to tell you what type of light bulb you can put in your light socket. They're only to regulate the commerce between the states to make sure that one state doesn't take an advantage of the other state, and to make sure that our foreign commerce is being evenly done, that we don't allow ourselves to get into economic warfare. They're to basically be the traffic cops. We're going to pick this back up, this commerce clause, in our next episode. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL
or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.